Hey everybody, it's JT. What is on your holiday meal shopping list? Well, I would suggest Painted Hills Natural Beef. It is some of the best beef in the world. And your friends and family will be thanking you for a long time if you serve Painted Hills Natural Beef for your holiday meals. And now you can buy it online just by going to PaintedHillsBeef.com. Use the code BBQNATION at checkout and save yourself 15% on your order. Give Painted Hills Natural Beef a place on your table this holiday season. We're running with the shadows
of the night. So baby, it's Barbecue Nation with JT on a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now here's JT on FM News 101.
Hey, welcome to the nation, the Barbecue Nation, and thanks for being with us today. I'm JT, along with Reynolds, here high atop the radio world in Portland, and say hi to all of our affiliates really quick, all the way down the Radio Northwest Network. We are just about 12 days away from Turkey Day, Thanksgiving. It is one of the biggest holidays in our country, and it's also the biggest meal of the year for most people. And when I talk about just the sheer volume and mass of the turkey stuffing, mashed potatoes, pie, all the fixings, all that stuff. So when you go to buy your turkey, do you actually know where it's been or how it's been harvested or processed? Or do you assume it's always like that heavy, just ball of white frozen mass? I mean, does WKRP Cincinnati ring any bells to you? Well, today on The Nation, we welcome back our friend Mark Anderson from Shampooey Farms out in the St. Paul, Oregon area. He's really the man to talk turkey with. And also our music today will be spiced up a little bit by Pat Benatar. So, Mark, welcome back to the show.
Thank you. Thank you, Jeff.
Give us, our listeners, a little background on Shampooey Farms and you, yourself, as far as being in the turkey business. I mean, I know turkeys aren't the only things you do, but it's kind of a mainstay.
Yeah, yeah. We've evolved and been doing a lot more turkeys the last couple of years. We've dabbled in the egg side and still do that a little bit, and the pork and the beef. But the turkey is the thing that's kind of captured our attention these days, and that's what we're focusing on. But my wife and I farm here on my family's farm that's been around since 1856 down here near Shampooey State Park. And I guess the history is just the thing that captures my history is my great aunt, like aunt like five times, raised turkeys down in Shampooey Park where the Frisbee Golf was, or is.
Really?
It wasn't Frisbee Golf then. It was the Oak Grove because the turkeys would eat the acorns.
Yeah.
And fatten up on that, and then she'd put them on the buckboard and take them up to Portland. And that the family story is that's where she got her Christmas money.
Oh, wow.
So
were those domesticated turkeys, or were this just a wild flock and she'd just grab them?
No, it's some kind of domesticated thing. We don't really know. I mean, it was a long time ago, buckboards and all. So,
oh, yeah.
I don't know the exact specifics of it. There are stories of taking turkeys up to Portland.
Were they alive when she took them?
Probably not.
I'm just trying to picture trying to keep it a, you know, herding turkeys is kind of like herding cats. I mean, you know, just trying to keep a dozen or so in the back of a buckboard. I was just trying to visualize that is why I asked.
No, I doubt it. I most likely bled out, but there's this thing called New York dress where they leave all the feathers on and the entrails inside and it kind of ages, kind of like aged beef.
Yeah.
So I suspect that's how they did it back then, because those turkeys 100 years ago were the heritage varieties, you know, your bronze or your Narragansett or your bourbons.
Mm-hmm.
Or, like you say, maybe they're just the wild. They're tough.
Were they darker meat, do you suppose?
Yes, because they didn't have the double breast.
Uh-huh.
The double breast is a new, fairly recent development in the turkey world. So lots more dark meat, a lot less breast, and that New York dress, there's some kind of enzyme that starts to break the meat down and tenderize it.
Sure.
So it's a big thing in the UK, like $12 to $15 a pound for these New York style dress. I don't think they call it New York dress in the UK, but very interesting that there's a whole different way of eating those heritage birds. But
that's interesting.
Yeah, so
That's interesting.
Yeah, you know, it's fascinating. You think turkey, oh, okay, Thanksgiving. But when you really get into it and start looking, there's some fascinating fun facts about it that you would never really think about.
Well, what you were talking about the double breast being a fairly new thing. It's been around as long as I've been around that I can remember, of course. So that's 50 years.
Sure.
But when did that kind of take over?
I don't have the dates. But Nicholas Valley of the Moon turkeys in California, there's a great like hour-long history of the development of the turkey.
Uh-huh.
I bet you it's in the 40s. Dude, don't quote me. I can't believe I'm saying this on the radio.
That's okay.
But they just slowly started developing, breeding. Hell, that turkey's got, you know, that turkey's bigger. Let's pick that one and breed that one. And
yeah,
somewhere along the line, there's some genetic twist where the inner breasts, which I think the heritage birds have, they just got bigger. Everything just got bigger. And they just bred for that. There's no genetic modification. It's just selective breeding.
Sure. Well, so, they've done it in horses and cattle and everything else. So, I mean,
sure.
It's not a bad thing.
There's no genetic modification in the meat that we eat.
Yeah.
It's just selective breeding. So, what's interesting, though, this is a little tidbit. The breeding stock that Nicholas started with in California came from Oregon and British Columbia, and the turkeys from British Columbia came over from the UK. So the UK Christmas turkey thing kind of was the parent stock for the US turkey industry. And Oregon, Wolf Creek down in that area was a big farm that was developing breeding stock, and Nicholas came up and bought some of those. Again, I'd have to watch that movie again and, you know, to get
sure
the specifics. But isn't that neat that it started, some of the initial breeding stock for Nicholas turkeys came out of Oregon in, what, the 30s, 40s or something like that?
Right.
So and now that company is huge.
Oh,
they're
yeah
in North Carolina. They're everywhere. And now I buy my turkey poults from Valley of the Moon Nicholas turkey breeding facility back east.
Okay. So my next question, Mark, was, is there anything real tricky about raising turkeys? I mean, I think when people, you know, if they come to your farm or they see they're out on a drive on a Sunday afternoon or whatever, and they see some people in their farm and they've got turkeys wandering around, I think that's just how we envision it. It's just turkeys wander around and eat stuff.
Well, that's kind of how we do it here. We try and control the wandering to specific areas of the pasture.
Sure. Yeah.
Because they can do some damage when they get out. I have a strict moratorium with my wife about the garden. So I get in trouble if they get out.
I can imagine.
But turkeys are very curious, and they will wander significantly. Once they're in the main pastures, technically we have these nets that kind of keep them in the area they're supposed to be, but often we won't really worry about it if they wander down away. I've seen them. Let me back up so that you have a better visual. So, rolling pasture, green grass or forage or oat stubble or whatever's there, a big trailer, big as in 30 feet long with awnings that span out 20 feet on either side to provide shelter. Mm-hmm. Water is hanging from those arms, feeders surrounding it. Then the turkeys hang out underneath there at night, or if the sun comes out, they come under the cover. And then when the weather's perfect, and they're pretty sensitive, so early mornings it's really neat, evenings or a cloudy day, they'll be 200-400 feet away from the shelter, just eating on whatever they want to eat, chasing grasshoppers. That's the thing that gets them in trouble a lot. They'll chase these stupid grasshoppers all the way across the pasture. And then they finally catch it 1,000 yards away from the trailer, and they turn around and they go, "Where am I?"
Yeah.
And you're like, "You morons, come on." So in our early years, we would go down in the evenings and chase these 30 turkeys back up to the shelter because they went down over a hill and they couldn't see the shelter. And they just sit there. As whatever. So now we have more fences, and we can keep them at least where they can see the shelter.
There you go.
Yeah.
Hey, Mark,
so,
we're gonna take a break here.
Real
quickly, I want to thank all the folks out at the Mount Angel Sausage Company for their support of the Quack Shack at the Ducks home games, which today is the last one, by the way. Mount Angel Sausage Company, that being James Hoke and his crew out there, have been very kind letting the folks at the Quack Shack sample a variety of sausage. And I can tell you from my personal experience, it's dang good stuff. We're going to be back on Barbecue Nation with Mark Anderson from Shampooey Park Farms talking about turkeys right after this. Don't go away.
It's full-flavored radio, Barbecue Nation with JT on FM News 101.
Welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network. This is Barbecue Nation. I'm JT along with Reynolds. And we're having some fun today because it's talking turkey talk with our buddy Mark Anderson from Shampooey Farms. If you'd like to email us, you can do it at barbecuenation@kxl.com or recipes@kxl.com. And Reynolds, here you go. It's your big shot.
Facebook.com/barbecuenation with JT. And I nailed it.
There you did. You did. You're good. That's why Reynolds is like a sports guy over on the other network, you know, or the other radio station here. He's got it down. Really good. Before we get back to actually talking turkeys, I wanted to ask Mark a question here. Do you know, I'm going to generalize this. In North America, do you know when the first Thanksgiving kind of occurred?
In North America?
Yeah, North America. Not just the United States, but in North America. That would include Canada and all that.
Why isn't the Pilgrims feast with the Native Americans somewhere in Plymouth Rock or something?
And well, it happened before that, actually. The Canadian Thanksgiving started in 1578 with this explorer named Martin Frobisher. Well, that's a hell of a name. He held the Thanksgiving celebration for the surviving his journey from England and out to Western Canada. So I'd throw a party too, man. That was some tough going in those days.
Yeah. Western Canada, yep. Not Eastern Canada, yep. Western.
Yep. So he got off in the east and walked across and did all that stuff. So anyway, that's good. You know, it all started with a fall harvest, kind of a thank you celebration, and that's kind of the history. But we're going to get into that in our lightning round with Mark here. So as we were talking off the air, what's the biggest bird? And you were telling me you got one up to 50 pounds that was dressed out.
Yeah. Yeah, that was a couple of years back. I got a... Did a batch for 6 months, which is pretty is a full life of the bird is 6 months, and got 50 pounders. That was one big 50 pounder. Most of them were like 46,
wow,
45.
Does that fit in a non commercial oven? A commercial oven's of course a lot bigger, you know.
No, that is for cut up.
Okay.
That you're getting them that big to make lunch meat or roast or ground turkey. So you don't raise them that big for holiday purposes.
Okay. So the holiday birds, if that's in a full 6 months, how long does a holiday bird take to come? And if you want a 20-pound bird, say?
Your window, and it changes so much because we're pasture-based, weather and all those factors. But typically... you start looking at those birds at 13 weeks,
mm-hmm.
14 weeks, and start saying, okay, what are you going to dress out as? So we shoot around 14 to 17, 18 weeks. You're getting way too big by 18. But, you know, that's the problem with this pasture method, or problem / the benefit. There's so little control over what's happening. You're going to have a 14-pound bird. A little hen is 14 pounds. And a big tom who maybe was the alpha tom of the group or
sure.
something was really healthy or really aggressive in chasing those grasshoppers. That's going to come out at 25 pounds. So it's a real pain for us who are trying to fill these orders based on 152 smalls, 192 larges, and you know, it's like, shoot. So again, this year, it happens every year. This year, we were off by probably 2 days on a butcher date, and so we had a ton of mediums instead of the smalls. So we're butchering Saturday to try and get 130 smalls for new seasons, and I'm delivering turkeys next week. So it's kind of like, I hope we make it.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
So how big are the turkeys when you actually get them? I mean, you're not hatching them out from eggs and turning them loose.
No, we get them from these hatcheries. You could get into that hatching side of life, vertical integrate that component, but you know, I got too many things as it is. But we're getting them a day old. They hatch them on, let's say, a Tuesday and have them in the U.S. mail by Tuesday night. 1 day of travel, you know, first class air, whatnot, overnight air. And then they arrive at the Portland airport and are dropped off the next morning here at the St. Paul post office, and I go down there and pick them up. It works.
Well,
it works pretty good.
Look, I worked for Amazon.com, or I should just say Amazon, several years ago, and I was one of their virtual guys. If they can get live turkeys to you in a day, all those people that are missing millions of packages, they need to go talk to their own post office about this. That's the only thing I'm going to say about that, because that was that was something. So did you have to, when you started, I mean, I know you grew up on the farm, this was kind of your family business and stuff, but what did you have to learn to really start growing commercial turkeys versus maybe having one or two of them around that you could then harvest and put in the freezer for your family use?
Oh, trial and error. I think the first batch of turkeys we did was like 25, and we were going to go to the farmer's market with them. I think five of them made it. And it's just like, whoops.
Oh my.
So just lots of trial and error. You know, the coyotes, we figured out the coyotes are really smart. They're not, you asked earlier, they're not easy to raise. They are very finicky. They're very sensitive to drafts and cold air. And they're, I guess fundamentally how it is turkeys have not been, they're not independent like a chicken. A chicken will just go and eat. Oh, food, that tastes good. I'll do it. A turkey needs a parent figure to show it how to eat, to show it what to drink and when to do it. So we actually start these baby turkeys. We'll get a couple of baby chickens, broilers, Cornish cross type things.
Sure.
And get them in with the turkeys. And the Cornish cross are just constant, like, eating all the time. And the turkey's all, oh, well, Bob's eating. That looks good. Okay, I'll go do what Bob's doing. You know, and it helps. It really does help. It's amazing how just a little thing like that will help the turkeys get that initial first couple of days.
There you go.
So trial and error.
Okay.
I mean, trial and error.
We got to take another break here, Mark.
Okay, great. Thanks.
Want to say hi to a couple of our affiliates on the way out of this break, KLBM in LaGrande and KWRO in Coos Bay. Reynolds and I will be back with Barbecue Nation and Mark Anderson right after this.
Got a question for JT? Call him right now at 503-417-9KXL or 877-733-1011. No one
would ever have you again. Hey, little Pat Benatar here on Barbecue Nation. I'm JT along with Reynolds and Mark Anderson from Shampooey Farms. Talking turkey today, by golly, because we've got Thanksgiving coming up in about 12 days. Mark, the changes in the eating habits of people, obviously, they just are. I mean, like everything, time changes things. Has that affected the turkey business?
Oh, yeah, of course. I mean, people prefer the white meat. And so they've developed birds with more and more white meat. I mean, the littlest component. Also, I think so much turkey is eaten in the United States in the form of lunch meat.
Yeah.
It's actually allowed. And you don't know, maybe it's a chicken and egg. Maybe we had these turkey farms and needed to produce turkey year-round, so we develop a turkey lunch meat habit. But, it's an old fact. It might be changed now, but around 70% of the turkey eaten in the United States is eaten in the form of lunch meat. And that's part of the reason we got into the processing on farm and butchering is we're making lunch meat and, well, roasts and other cuts to help provide turkey to our customer base year-round, not just the whole birds.
Okay, a couple things here that I know people are going to want to know. When they go to the store and they're looking at a fresh turkey versus a frozen one, what should the consumer be looking for? I mean, that's a very general question, but, you know, give us two things in particular, maybe three, that they should be looking for when they're selecting a fresh turkey. Because a frozen one's just this big white ball, you know, with a weight tag and a price tag on the outside. So,
Right. Basically, the simple answers is you should be considering about a pound and a half to 2 pounds per guest that's attending the meal. So first and foremost, get the right size bird.
Mm-hmm.
Make sure it fits in your oven.
Yeah, that's important.
Make sure you get all the fixings for the stuffing. But when it comes to fresh or frozen, you can go fresh, you can go frozen. It kind of depends on your pocketbook. A lot of those frozen freebie birds are actually from the previous year or were, you know, I don't know the exact, there's no actual date on those birds. There's some kind of Julian date that means something to somebody somewhere, but,
you can't figure it out.
I can't figure it out.
Yeah.
But that whole fresh frozen thing is we actually freeze our birds. So I really can't bash the frozen because we freeze them because here in Oregon, it's hard, like I was saying, it's hard to get a bird to wait in November.
Right.
So we raise our birds at peak season, July, August, September, butcher most of them around September, early October, freeze them negative 14 degrees. So it's frozen. And then sell them frozen. And the benefit there is you lock in that freshness versus, quote-unquote, fresh birds, sadly, have been kept at or above 26 degrees for up to 3 months. And that's still, by the USDA standards, classified as fresh.
Oh.
Maybe it's 28 degrees. So, yeah, there's a little gray area there on that fresh-frozen subject matter. But we're so small, we don't have a freezer that's set at 28 degrees, though. I don't go down that path.
All right. So, Mark Anderson, it is your time to enter, you know what it is, the lightning round. This is a special Thanksgiving edition of the lightning round. Are you ready?
I'm ready.
Okay.
I'm cracking my knuckles right now.
I bet you are. The Friday after Thanksgiving is called what?
Black Friday.
There you go. The Macy's Thanksgiving Day Parade began back in what decade? You don't have to give me a particular year, but what decade?
1700s. 1925.
Hey, that's pretty good. You're right in the middle. It was the 1920s. Back on the original Thanksgiving feast with the Pilgrims and all those Native Americans, I was trying to think of the tribes that they were. Do you know what was served?
I hope turkey.
No, there was no turkey.
Oh, my.
It was,
we're living a lie.
Yeah, no, it's venison.
Fish and deer.
Venison, yeah, and lobster, and some other white fish that they could catch, and a lot of corn, and they had some dried fruits and things, because it was the Indians that kind of showed them how to do that. Who persuaded Abraham Lincoln that to make Thanksgiving a national holiday? I had to dig for some of this crap, man.
Abraham Lincoln?
Yeah, he's the one who made Thanksgiving a national holiday. Okay, so I'm giving you that part of it. But who is the person that persuaded Honest Abe to make Thanksgiving a national holiday?
I think his wife.
No. Although they had the same first name. I'll give you a hint. Mary had a little lamb. whose fleece was white as snow.
Is that a hint?
That's a hint, man.
Oh, wow. I slept through that class.
Okay.
Right, hit me. What's the answer?
Sarah Josepha Hale. She's the one who wrote Mary Had a Little Lamb, and she got, like, really enamored with the thought of Thanksgiving being a national holiday, and she just hammered on Old Abe till, you know, wouldn't have it. What do you think of that, Reynolds?
First off, I think that's a solid question. I also think that's the hardest question you've ever asked in the lightning round.
It is. It is. And I had to dig for it because it was tough.
That hurt.
That hurt. That hurt.
You're supposed to make it easy on me.
Okay, here's an easy one. Who wanted the turkey to be the national bird?
I knew you were going to ask that one. I'm thinking it was like Ben Franklin.
It was Benny. It was Benny, Benny, Benny.
Hey, yeah, and, you know, he's the guy who did this crazy daylight saving thing, too. So.
Yeah, well, we have to.
You can't get them all right.
You can't get them all right. Turkeys were thought to be the first what type of animal in the Americas?
I'm going to say domesticated.
Yep. Yep.
Boom! On the fire.
Yeah, you got
it. Even before dogs, really.
Yep, they were the first ones. Well, because really, like you were talking about the New York style or whatever that came over, you know, and they brought turkeys from England over and that, and they, I'm guessing they turned them loose. And that's kind of happened.
Hey, you know what's cool, though?
What's that?
Turkeys came from North America. Columbus took them to Spain, or somebody did. They originated from America. They're not from Europe. They don't have them in Europe originally.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah, they all came over, the Incans, and, man.
Okay.
I'm going to stop talking now.
That's okay. Now, here's another tough one.
Okay.
True or false, Native Americans liked cranberries. This is back in the 1620s. Okay.
1620s liked cranberries.
Yeah, do they like cranberries? You know, we have cranberry sauce and cranberry relish and all that stuff at Thanksgiving.
I would say yes.
And
true. Sorry.
You're wrong.
They did not like them.
They did not eat cranberries. They did find them extremely useful for dyeing fabric and decorating pottery. But they didn't like the taste. And unless it's that cranberry jelly stuff, I won't eat it either. You know? Reynolds is giving me a thumbs up on that.
Oh, you guys got it all wrong. You got to come to my house for my wife's. It's awesome.
What, the relish? Now, I will confess that some of the relish is good, but, you know.
Homemade. She buys a bag of them and makes it.
Okay.
Nothing out of a can. If it's got ripples on it, not supposed to be eaten.
Okay, well. How long did the first Thanksgiving celebration last?
3 days.
You knew that one, didn't you?
No.
No, it was 3 days.
Oh, cool.
Yeah. What was the one president who didn't want anything to do with the turkey and didn't want anything to do with Thanksgiving?
Okay, well, it had to be after Abraham Lincoln, right?
Nope.
Well,
we got a minute left, so strain your brain here, bud.
George Washington.
Nope. It was George Washington who proclaimed a national day of Thanksgiving in 1789. It wasn't official. He just kind of proclaimed it. But Thomas Jefferson did not like the turkeys and didn't want anything to do with Thanksgiving. How about that? Yeah. We're going to take a break. We're going to be back here on Barbecue Nation with Stump the Turkey Grower right after this.
Wait, wasn't that Stump the Turkey Grower?
Yeah.
It's a Northwest Lifestyle Weekend. Now, with Barbecue Nation, here's JT on FM News 101.
Welcome back to the Nation here on the Radio Northwest Network. I'm JT along with Reynolds. We're talking with Mark Anderson today. Real quickly, our thanks go out to the folks at Painted Hills Natural Beef. who are also supporting the Quack Shack. Painted Hills Natural Beef produces some of the best beef in the world. I know because I've eaten probably 4 tons of it in my life. And Painted Hills Natural Beef is available at the finer food markets around the Northwest, everywhere. We've only got just a few short minutes here, Mark. And by the way, how can people contact you at Champlain Farms? We'll put your website and stuff on ours, but go ahead and tell them how they can track you down right now.
Yeah, at our website, champlainfarm.com, they can learn about our program, see what we have to offer, and order a bird right there. Real easy, like 3 clicks and you're there. And then they can come down to the farm next weekend and pick them up.
Okay.
See what's going on and
can you can you actually go out and pick your bird?
No, but you can go see some birds.
Okay.
Not the ones we're...
I got it.
Next year we might do that. We're kind of playing around with that idea of butchering the week of Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
Just doing a small batch for folks, and maybe it's like a blanket price because I don't know what the sizes will be.
Sure.
I got playing around with it, but yeah, I have people who call, I want my kids to see what it's all about. So we do a little bit of that.
There you go.
Maybe next year.
Okay. We've only got a couple minutes left here, so remember, folks, if you want to email us, you can do it at BBQNation, that's BBQNation@KXL.com. Same with recipes@KXL.com. One more time, Mr. Reynolds there.
Facebook.com/BBQNation with JT.
There you go. And if you send us pictures of something you've created on your grill or your smoker, Reynolds and I will decide which is the cool ones, and you could win a little smoker box from the folks up at Smokehouse Products, i.e. Bear Mountain Forest Products and all that. That's kind of cool. Really quick, Mark, give us your best recipe. We got about 3 minutes left here for cooking a turkey. How do you do it at the Anderson House?
Low and slow.
Okay.
Just we do two stuffings. There's a stuffing inside and there's a stuffing in a Pyrex.
Sure.
But put a little stuffing in there and cover it with tin foil. Breast, is it up or down?
I've done
you
both.
Know, the thing here is my wonderful wife does all the amazing stuff. I just raise the birds.
Okay.
So I'm sorry. But
That's kind of a
scapegoat. It is good.
Of a scapegoat thing there, Mark. It's kind of BS because I know you eat them, so you got to have an idea how they're put together there. Do you rub them with salt inside the cavity after you rinse them out and put any oil on them or anything? Butter?
Butter. Butter's always good.
Butter's good.
I've done the bacon thing, wrapping the turkey in bacon.
That yeah.
Fun once.
Takes a lot of bacon.
Yeah, and we always brine.
Okay. And what's in your brine?
Salt, and some garlic salt, and a few garlic cloves and onion sit in there 24 hours.
Yeah. See, I'm not a brine guy.
You're not?
Yeah, I've done it. I've also deep fried them. I mean, I've cooked them upside down so the moisture, the juices go into the breast and all that. And I mean, they all work. The only way they don't work is if you don't pay attention. But
correct.
You got
to do that temperature on the breast and the thigh differently because everything cooks at a different rate.
Exactly. So, but my deal is you kind of rinse off the bird and, you clean out the inside, rinse that out really well. And then I just rub it with some salt, and then I put some stuffing in the cavity. I also put some on the parson snout, that's the little flap in the back. And and then I just kind of salt lightly the outside of that and, with a little oil, and it's good. But anyway, we got to get out of here for today, but I want to thank Mark Anderson for taking his time. He's actually been digging a ditch. And we pulled him away from that because he had some issues to take care of there at the farm. So, Mark from Champlain Farms, thanks for being with us today. I appreciate it, buddy.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
No problem. We've got McGarrion's coming up, Bushlack after that. Remember, folks, our motto here is turn it, don't burn it. Check out thecowboycook.com. And for Mr. Reynolds and myself, we will see you next week right here on Barbecue Nation.
Barbecue Nation is produced by Alpha Media USA in association with JTSD Productions, LLC. All rights reserved, copyright 2016. Barbecue Nation is managed skillfully by Reynolds in production compound 4 high above the skyline of PDX, the one with no windows. We'll be back next week with another entertaining and fun edition of Barbecue Nation. At least, that's what we believe. Remember, a good long smolder is better than a 2-minute flameout. See you next week.